Hello and welcome to another episode of Second Z's Cubed, brought to you by Alma Pictures and Baker Street Media. This podcast explores cultures from around the world and celebrates performing arts and inspires the next generation of creatives. Join us as we travel to our next destination. We hope you enjoy the show. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Second Z's, again with your hosts, Aya, Jessica, and myself.
I'm back.
And we're back. Thanks, Jess. And we're back with another episode. This time it is episode number 4 for Shogun that we're going to be discussing. And for this episode, of course, we will look at all of the things that we have been looking at over time, offering our ideas, our critiques, and our opinions. And as usual, if you have not been spoiled, please do not proceed with this podcast unless you enjoy spoilers. So that is just for you all to think through. And we also want to mention to the audience that on the 31st, Shogun will be coming out. So Shogun will be continuing, and Gentlemen in Moscow will be premiering. So that will be interesting because we'll be talking about two different things in our podcast world. So the name of this episode is The Eightfold Fence. And this is with the director Toy again and his usual group. And the basic idea for this episode is that Blackthorn and Mariko are basically confronted with a lot of issues when Blackthorn is asked to train Toranaga's gun regiment for the upcoming war. I think I will share a few of my thoughts from the 4th episode, my basic thoughts, and then I want to hear people's detailed thoughts before I share my critiques. Maybe would be a better idea. So I think where I could start with this episode is I think my opinion about Yabushige is slightly changing, as Aya said last week, I think it was, because he is definitely, you can just see more of the detail in his character, though he is a really creepy person. I think what's most interesting to me about this episode 4 is you can see there's like Toranaga like trying to figure out how to get the upper hand. So he's like, all right, well, we've got to quick get these people trained. We got to quick get a strategy together because things are heating up. So you kind of can feel this buildup of tension. And I think it was very interesting when he was trying to get these people, trying to outmaneuver or outplay Chess, these other guys. And I like what the one thing I wrote down in the quote was, the key to victory lies in anticipating your enemy's next move. And that's totally Toranaga every day. He's just like doing his best to like get the... That was from episode 3, that quote, but I'm thinking about it again because he's like, let's go, like, let's get this sorted out. And meanwhile, you have Blackthorn like tripping along, getting promoted in their society, doesn't even realize what that is. He doesn't even know what kind of honors and favors he's got. And having all kinds of terrible, ridiculous things happening that are his fault, like tons of cultural crashing, especially when they like, oh yeah, and so you have this woman now, so whatever you want to do with her is all good because she's now part of your household, taking care of all your affairs, and she's basically going to be loyal to you with her whole life. Like, and he's like, no. And it's like he has a temper tantrum. I just like, come on, man, you're getting off the chain, like, come on. So I think one thing that one of the things that I really appreciate, I'm going to share a little quote that I really appreciated from this because there were a few things that I did think were interesting. But of course, that same thing I keep saying about him being the prattling child, it just continues to bother me. But there were two quotes that I think were really interesting for me. The first one was when she talks about the Eightfold Fence, Miss Mariko. She says, "Do you know the Eightfold Fence? From the time we are small, it is something we are taught to build within ourselves, an impenetrable wall behind which we can retreat wherever, whenever we need. You must train yourself to listen without hearing. For instance, you can listen to the sound of the blossom falling or the rocks growing. If you really listen, your present circumstance vanishes. Do not be fooled by your politeness, our bows, or major maze of rituals. Beneath it all, we could be a great distance away, safe and alone." And then later, like, talks about, like, that's like with the Eightfold Fence, is like, yeah, that is exactly what that whole process that Blackthorn is learning is about, is like, don't put yourself out there, like we keep saying. And the other quote that I keep on thinking about is the one where she's talking about, like, after she confronts him, like, "Hey, you need to know your place in life, buddy. Like, you are not going anywhere." Basically, like, good luck, dude. You are really not in control right now. And she says it so nicely. She was like, I like how she says, when she says, like, you know, our houses are built to go up as quickly as they come down because death is in our air and sea and salt. So that's when the past. And then when we have, like, all these different circumstances kind of coming together, you can see how this whole death and confrontation continues to build up. And meanwhile, then your boy, he needs to stop tripping over Mariko, man. He's like, Mariko. He doesn't know his lane. So he's just like, oh, and then it's just, I think she figures, like, well, she has to do something for this guy to make him feel at home, like all these things. So she's like really trying to get him to feel comfortable in Japan. And I think that's a real challenge of this episode, is like them going back and forth. And then with the ending, like, everything just falls apart. Like, everything they were trying to do just, like, blows up in their face, literally. So,
yeah, literally, that was intense. That scene was a shock.
So, basically, I think for me, of course, Toya is very, very, he's very, very, like, careful in his directing style. I feel like he just, like, looks for... He makes it like a painting, almost like Terrence Malick in some ways, is how I feel when I watch his directing. But anyway, so we'll talk about other things and things that I don't like soon, but I'd like to hear people's overall impression before we get into the weeds.
Mm-hmm. So as I was saying, it's to you, my last night, Allison, is... The fourth one is my favorite episode so far. I just think because it has where the episode in the beginning, I really kind of was sort of with Blackthorn in the beginning, because he was calling it out for what it was. He said, "Is this just another prison, only with better living quarters?" He had no agency or control over what was happening. In spite of the great honor that was put on him and his fancy title and all this stuff that he was given, he's basically being treated like a top-notch, top echelon person, but he has no say in anything, because once he realized that he no longer had access or ownership of his own ship or his own men, which that was his leadership position that he was beholden to first when he got there, that's what he was really mad about, and not really seeing the big picture of what he was being given and what was being bestowed upon him, which was frustrating to watch, but also I got why he was a little bit annoyed. It was so annoying to watch him be kind of petulant. I think Mariko, the actress who played Mariko, had really good face acting in those scenes. You could just see Mariko trying to not lose it,
Yes.
And but she was really patient with him. Also just her, but also really frustrated herself, but also didn't show it. Because he
Yeah.
was showing his emotions and she was not. And you see that contrast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite part was when he was trying to get on his ship, and then she was like, "I'm afraid you are forbidden." And then there was a point where she said, and she had this like smile. She's like, "I'm afraid that's not possible."
Yeah.
She's like, "I'm afraid you are mistaken." It's such a relatable thing as a woman when you instead when you have to be like really when you have to be really tough, you just say it with a smile. You're like. But it was like the bitchiest thing she had said so far. She's like, "I'm afraid you're mistaken. That was not what we agreed." And the smile she had was like was pretty badass. I liked that.
BA.
It was funny. Yeah, throughout this episode, it was funny that there were moments you could see her losing the ability to hide how she's feeling. And I think that really showed up after she read Blackthorne's journals, like, and she started interacting with him again and like looking at him. You could see like a moment of her true emotions showing before like a mask drops down and she goes back and withdraws inward. So it was interesting seeing that happening, as you know, the character of Mariko progresses through her own relationship with Blackthorne. Yeah, she wasn't as stoic as stoic as she usually is.
She was having some feelings in her life.
She was disturbed.
Disturbing thoughts and feelings.
We see why she was disturbed, but later on in the
Well,
episode.
that is controversial as well. No. Controversial. Because some people are on the camp that it
Controversial.
was her, and some people on the camp that it wasn't her. Dun, dun,
I'm on the
dun.
camp of it wasn't her.
I think it was her.
So I really want to understand why I feel like I'm so fixated on Yabushige as a character, like from episode
Well, you
one.
should be. He's kind of important.
Yeah, but there are other important characters too, and yet I find myself fixated on him every episode. I do think that a lot of it has to do with the actor. Asano is so good playing him. And this episode had so many great comedic moments, even though they were very much low-key comedic moments with him.
Yeah.
He's just I think he's really good at comedy. You know, just so many moments where he's bewildered, confused, like you could see him, he's like scared out of
He was
like
scared out of his mind.
scared
Yeah.
of yeah. So it's really funny contrasting that to how he was first shown on screen in episode one. I think that's the fun part about his character, just seeing the ebbs and flows of his stature.
Do you know that he played
Sorry.
Genghis Khan in that Mongol movie?
I have never heard of that movie.
Anyway,
I know I did not know
I'm
that.
gonna watch it to see
Yeah.
how he does. I'll let you guys know if it was anything interesting.
Yeah. Let us know.
Anyway, that was a side.
But
Go ahead, keep going.
So it was really fun seeing his story develop this episode. And I was like looking up stuff online. And there was this one reaction that really cracked me up. This, I guess, as a book reader, was completely confused about the portrayal of Yabushige on the show, because apparently in the book he's completely unlikable. And this person was confused as to why so many people like the character on the show. They're like, "This is not how it was in the book.
Oh, that's
Nobody
true.
respects him." Yeah. Nobody respects him. Nobody likes him.
Blackthorn was also a jerk in the book, like the worst jerk in the world. He's like a gentleman in comparison right now.
I can see that. I can really see that.
He's like such a golden retriever boyfriend, Blackthorn.
Right, but that's not how he was in the book. He's a literal...
I know.
Yeah. But yeah, Yabushige's scenes when they first arrive to his village and they're putting on the little performance for Toranaga, and Toranaga's like raising his fan up and down. So you see Yabushige kind of freaking out, like, at how Toranaga has this effect on his own men.
Of course, they love it.
And then you have his nephew. Yeah, because Toranaga has something called charisma.
He's a showman. Yes.
He is a showman. He's an understated showman, which makes it even more effective.
Uh-huh.
Oh, oops, sorry.
He knows just how to move them wherever he wants.
Exactly. And then his nephew comes up, and it's so interesting seeing how his nephew is joining in the fray with all of his little political manipulations and maneuvering.
Yeah, he's trying,
while
himself
is being, you know, manipulated. Yeah, he's like a little baby manipulator, and he's trying, but it's working low key on his uncle. He's like, those men, when they're trained, they're going to be your men. And that, I guess, helps calm Yabushige down. And then his freak out when Ishido's men arrive, that was really funny. He's trying to, I was laughing so hard at that scene. I'm sure it was meant to be like more high stakes, but he's just, his reaction, his facial expressions, his tone going up and down, it was really funny to see. And he's trying to save his own hide at the same time, like, save Toranaga as well, because he knows that when Toranaga goes down, he goes down, while also trying to make Ishido's men believe that he's also with them. He's like juggling so many balls, and little does he know his little, you know, turd of a nephew is going to ruin all of that. Ruin all the plans.
The nephew doesn't even know what's really going on either. That's the funniest part.
Yeah, he very much, him and what's his name, Nagakado, definitely give toddler vibes to me.
Oh yes,
toddlers who are set loose in a kitchen, and then you come in and you find raw eggs splattered all over the place, and you know, just two toddlers with their wide eyes and like, what happened?
Yeah.
Did I do that?
Yoshi.
Yes, you did do that. You just unleashed mass chaos. What were you thinking was going to happen?
Like, I'll tell your father. So, tell him. Me.
Yeah.
Except exactly. When it's grown men who have power over armies, instead of raw eggs, it's raw body parts.
But you know. Yeah. Don't remind them of that part of how raw. No, I was like, wow, sheep guts. I'm really, really.
I was very frustrated with Nagakado at the end of the episode. Although, you know, the way they've been laying out his character from the early episodes, this point makes sense for him.
Mm.
But it was still frustrating to see overall, you know, brings into questions, like, if Toranaga was a little more open with his son, would this have been maybe averted? Or is this just a matter of low self-esteem combined with ego? And, you know, just
kids probably trying to like this. Do something.
Yeah, he's trying to prove his
worth.
And low-key, I feel like maybe he was a little threatened by Omi, even though technically they're both like Nepo babies, but he's just like a higher degree of a Nepo baby. But, you know, I'm just like, why on earth would you think this is a smart or good idea at all? What would possess you to do that? I know you want to prove yourself to the world and everything.
Probably just because he thinks he can do it, right? Wants to show that he can do it.
I also also think Tornagos knows his son and knows that he has qualities that aren't exactly fit for leadership, or he's soft in some ways that can be dangerous for him and for his son's life, but also for the bigger picture for him and his authority as well. So he's been trying to temper that, but also trying to instruct his son into the right direction. But his son doesn't understand that. He just sees that he, in his mind, that his father doesn't approve of him or something. And I think he's partially correct to see that, because he sees that his father has hesitations about his potential, his ability. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't quite understand how, in what way, that his father is hesitant. But he senses that hesitation, and he senses that that his father is withholding from him in some ways, but for good intention. So it's partially of like being a smart leader himself, Tornaga, but also being like a good dad, kind of balancing those two things. Meanwhile, his son is really just feels like poop, because he wants to be a big kid. He wants to be seen as big man. And he is very sweet. He has a very sensitive side, you can tell. And you can tell he's, like, I think you were saying, low self-esteem, which I think comes from ego. I think low self-esteem and ego are not mutually exclusive, because when you have low self-esteem, you're very wrapped up in yourself, just in a lower
just
way.
Just in a different way. Sometimes it come out.
And, yeah, but also, even the way he acted from all of that was still incredibly shocking, just from their cultural perspective that they've been establishing this whole time. And the way he acted was so completely shocking on multiple levels. As you can see, after he slaughtered all the, big spoiler, after he slaughtered all the Ishido's men, and the one leader had said, "This is not how samurai acts. This is savage." Even he was shocked and disgusted. He because it went way outside of protocol.
But also, yeah, way outside of everything.
And way outside of their dignity. Mm-hmm. You know, it was already a tense situation.
Well, you just froze. Mm-hmm. Are you back? Yeah, I think you're back.
I was like, the thing that made it even more shocking to me is that we just tail end of seeing what happened to Fuji's husband because of just drawing his sword in front of the councilman. And
right,
there were all these dire consequences. And he saw that, just this one small gesture, the effects of that one small gesture. And he goes, "Oh, I'm just going to take that and add like dynamite, add like a whole bunch of other things." Like, what consequences does he think he's going to face based off of these actions? Does he think he's not going to face any consequences? Like, he has to know on some level his dad is going to be absolutely furious with him, because this goes completely against the leadership philosophy that Toronaga embodies and has been trying to teach his son.
Yes, exactly.
I think he also sees what his cousin had seen. He said that as long as his father's not there, and his father is probably on the way to being impeached anyway, he no longer owns that village or those men. So he acted as if they were his. And I also think, to answer the question of what consequences does he think he's going to face, he probably doesn't think he's going to face any consequences, or not to the extent that happened in episode one, because he's that Nepo baby position. He is higher up. I feel like you don't really feel the need to save face if you feel like you never had it to begin with. And so I think that's why he acted that way.
Hmm. So, yeah, I think maybe it could have been that. But it's very complicated with him, because he's still really young too, right? And young kids want to do things. But yeah, let's.
Do we know how old he is?
Or the character?
Yeah, the character itself, not the actor. When he unsheathed
his sword, it felt very much like a child holding a toy sword. It was like, gah! And then they're like, okay, that's cute. Put it back.
I'm telling you, him and Omi give me toddler vibes.
The actor is 24 years old, but anyway.
Yeah, I'm just wondering about the character. I mean, he does have a baby face, but just like his whole demeanor gives me very much young vibes. And he's like very preoccupied with status and also, weirdly enough, regulations, considering that he completely broke regulations. It showed up, I think, in season 3 when Ishido's men were entering the courtyard and they're saying, you know, we need to inspect everyone. And he was like, the Greys aren't allowed to, you know, enter this area. And it feels like he has some knowledge, but he was like morally affronted by the appearance of that samurai. And then when that same samurai appeared again in the village, it just sent off another rage for him. I wonder if it low-key has something to do, a little bit to do with classism.
Probably. Yeah, so we can maybe move to the part where everyone's having controversies over and headaches and heart attacks. So let's see. First of all, we have to build it up because obviously your boy was taking his little bath and Lady M dropped by to say hello, but she didn't realize he was going to be in the hot bath. Or did she? Dun, dun, dun. We'll never know. But anyway, they had that situation. She's kind of like just... That whole scene, it was partly based on a painting. I think there's a really old painting. Something, the woman and the something or other. I can't remember what that's called. Anyway, if anyone knows it, send me the name. I saw it before, like the thing they did with the framing of her when she was turned her back to him. That was the actual, that's like a painting. That's a homage to a painting.
Oh.
So anyway, the framing and everything, beautiful lighting and all. And I feel like she was like, I'm in the camp that says that it was not her, that it was Chiyo. Chiyo is his maid. And I think it was Chiyo.
Oh.
I think it was her.
Anyway, so that's where the internet is divided, but I think it was Chiyo. So, because they both have really long hair, and also because she, if Mariko would have really wanted him, she would have got him in the hot bath, man. Why would she chill out somewhere else if they were in the middle of nowhere? You know what I mean? For real. Like.
Because she did get him. They were talking. And that was a very.
You thought that was the buildup for her? I don't think so, no. I also don't think so. Because I also think she was still mad at him. So, like, I feel like they did, like, connect on an emotional level. But I think she was still really mad at him. I don't think she would be willing to be that vulnerable. That's my opinion.
Yeah. I think the little smirk she had before she blew out the lights was a red hair.
Yeah.
That was the scene. But I think it was
her. I'm pretty sure it was Gio.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that the progression of their relationship has definitely been interesting to see. But I just, everything that we've learned about Mariko and how reserved she is and how cautious she is.
I don't think she would be that fast. Yeah.
I don't see that translating into, you know, that's just not in character. But I think the showrunners did this on purpose so that they could create some dialogue, some discourse on the internet. Because every side has enough evidence to believe that they are right. So,
well, we're going to compare right now the face of these characters. All right, this is one character. Okay, I'm going back to this thing. Let's see. Where is the first time you see this FaceTime with this actress?
I loved Fuji in this episode, yeah. Just as an aside.
Fuji was great, and Maid was great, too. The housekeeper, Yuki, was great, too.
Yes, please.
I Googled it because there was the part where he started had a tantrum and was saying he didn't accept any of all the stuff he was getting. And he just, like, walked out to the yard, and then Mariko just is saying, you can't step on the moss, that's really disrespectful. Which, I love that she said that, it was a very stoic thing to say, instead of, like, stop being an asshole, she was like, stop stepping on the moss! And so he was like, what? And he's like, oh, and then he steps back on the stone slabs. So the second time, I noted that both times that I watched it. The second time I watched it, there was a scene right before when they're entering the household, and you see he's walking next to Mariko, and you see Mariko and Fuji, and they are doing their little floaty, teeny tiny steppy little steps, and they're both stepping on the slabs, like they're not walking off the slabs, the slab. And I noticed that very particularly, that stuck out to me. And then I saw him, he's bumbling next to them, but he's on the grass. And then I was like, oh, he didn't know. Because they knew, so that's why the slabs were there. I was like, that's interesting how dainty they are not walking on the earth and they're staying on the stones. And I was like, oh, it's because it's the moss. Mm-hmm. So it was an interesting foreshadowing that I connected with it right after she Mariko gave context, like stepping on the moss is disrespectful. She didn't say anything when he did it earlier that day, but she definitely pointed it out in that moment.
Because she was done with him.
Yeah, she's like, because I think, well, they were both walking in the house, so maybe she even noticed. But yeah, he's just like bumbling next to them, and everything's very staged and ritualized, and he's just he's bumbling along, and they're doing the ritual. And so I looked up moss. I was like, I wanted to see why moss was significant in Japanese culture and why it was disrespectful to step on it. And there were two things this is very basic Google research that I found. No, I didn't look up any scholarly articles, to be fair.
Hey, but that's okay. If you gave us a good enough answer, we might believe it.
Oh, no, yeah. So there's two things that I found in my brief research. The significance of moss. The first reason they said it was something about time. But I think the one that I liked was that it's a symbol of an imperfection because moss doesn't have a very specific growth pattern. So moss represents how things exist in imperfection, the concepts, the principle of wabi-sabi.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, interesting.
So, yes. And I thought that was interesting. And it also alludes to the lack of control they ultimately have, where Mariko says, we live and we die. Beyond that, we have no control. It's almost just like death could come at any moment. The chips fall where they may. And I think that this episode had very much a theme of not being in control of things and having to live with that. Whether it was the reference to the Eightfold Fence, where they have this coping system where they create this wall figuratively to exist behind and protect themselves versus the actual circumstances where there was this protocol that they had to go through, but then all of these things were happening that were out of their control.
Right.
From Ishido's men suddenly showing up unannounced to what happened at the very end, just all these things that nobody was anticipating. And I think the growth of the moss, the way moss grows is it grows in ways you can't anticipate or plan. So I don't know if that was intentional for the writers to put the moss thing in there as like a tie-in with the overall theme, but I do think that that was a very interesting part, a very interesting part of their culture to show in the timing that they showed it. And also I just liked the little connection of like seeing them walk in the house where they were walking on the stones very respectfully and he wasn't, and then later connecting that, telling him you can't walk on the moss, it's disrespectful.
What?
I love the gift exchange scene.
You know how to use
what
guns.
What? I'm so confused. What did you say?
Oh no.
She just like
I think she was asking if Fuji knows how to use
he
guns.
Said that he would teach her. And also they if you remember, they had certain guns that they had bought from the Portuguese back in the day, like the warriors had some gun technology. But I don't, and Blackthorn when he got the swords from her, and then he gave her the guns, he said he would teach her how to use guns.
Okay, because when she held it to the men who were saying he had to give the guns to them, she seemed for a second like she knew what she was doing. But I think he was just impressed with her.
Yeah.
How she took pretty quickly to something she wasn't familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Or just her willingness to stick her neck out like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He probably saw, he's like, teach her how to use guns. Mm-hmm. She can learn.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
Fuji was a delight in this episode.
She's like, after all I do for you, what do you do?
You start to see some agency.
I felt bad for her.
Yeah.
She's had the least agency of all those characters, because we see what happens to her in episode one, and she has to, and then, you know, once she loses her husband, she's untethered and she's beholden to people. And then they're just like, you're going to be this guy's consort now. And then she's like, what the heck?
I don't want to.
I mean, it's also, she's this highly educated, highborn woman. And to be in kind of a low position like that, where she's so dependent on other people,
yeah.
I think is a tragic part of her story. And an interesting part of her story. A villain origin story, if you will.
I also loved how she put her foot down and like, she's like, enough is enough. I'm not just going to lay over and let other people determine how to live my life. And, you know, Mariko went back to Toronaga. She's like, she can do it for 6 months.
This is a short-term contract, people.
I'm done. Yeah.
I also liked the editing of that, where she was like, torn
out 1 year. I feel like Mariko this whole time is just like, oh, yeah. These people. It's like when you have someone who's like super smart in a room, like who's like two or three levels smarter than everyone else. And then everything that happens is just like, good grief. What are these people doing?
Mariko is
like, you can tell she respects Toranaga, for example, because he's really smart. Like he's really smart and he knows what he's doing. So like, she really respects that. But then she's dealing with a lot of other people, just like, oh, you could just feel it.
Yeah. It definitely makes you think.
She's a lot of times as smart.
She's intelligent. She's intellectually smart. She's very highly educated, and she's also very emotionally intelligent.
Yeah.
And it's the lack of emotional IQ. In the room for that. The
yes. To say the least. Good.
Yeah. I like to think of alternate universes where, you know, she's a regent.
Maybe she would be Lady of Sheba instead of everyone else. That would be interesting.
Right.
Yeah. Let her True. Run the country.
So, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. But I was saying earlier that I also enjoyed the gift exchange scene. Just after seeing the scenes between Fuji and her grandfather and him talking about her father's sacrifice, and then for her to gift Blackthorn her father's swords was so weighty to me. And that scene actually did make me emotional, even though I don't feel like Blackthorn fully understood
right.
the significance of that gesture.
He didn't.
Mm-mm. Poor little dum-dum.
He knew it was big, though, and I think I felt that he didn't feel himself worthy, because he tried to say, like, I can't accept this, meaning, like, this seems very intense and emotional for you, and we don't know each other very well.
But,
you know, he felt undeserving of the gift, but...
Right, and then also puts you in the on the in the debt of the other as well. So like there's a word in Chinese that I'm probably going to say wrong again. But because I pronounce my words pretty like I'm still like a kindergartner baby in Chinese. But guangxi is an important word, and that means like when you give something to someone or you do something for somebody, then they owe you and vice versa. But it's like the process of building good relationships and favor with other people, right? So like you want to build favor and relationships mm-hmm. with people so they protect you and whatever else you need, right? If something happens or it's a part of the community building thing. But I think also she was really happy that he's not treating her like a crap, mostly, like, kind of just like yeah.
Her initial reaction was so funny.
It's a pity you guys haven't seen episode 5 yet, because she's This has been a production of Baker Street Media and Alma Pictures. Join us next week for more of our journey through the world of culture and art. Thanks for joining us.